On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. We're coming to you just a couple minutes after the NCAA Tournament Field of 64 was revealed on ESPN2. The NCAA Tournament Field is set, and guess what? Virginia is not in the NCAA Tournament. Here joining me to talk about that and a lot more about college baseball is Darren Vaught, host of the ACC Baseball Etc. podcast on the D1 Baseball Network. Darren, you were down in Durham last week. I know you're bouncing around a little bit there, but thanks for joining me today. It's a great time of year for college baseball if you're outside of the city limits of Charlottesville.
Yeah, which is not a typical feeling for the listeners of this show. I understand that. It is, it's weird. It was just a weird year. I think, you know, we're going to dig into it, but I think you can chalk it up to that and that only. It's only the third time in 22 years that Coach Oak and the guys have not gotten it done. It is an anomaly. I don't think this is anything you can point to as a trend or whatever, but weird year.
Extremely weird across college baseball in general. I mean, you're talking about, you know, we came out here in the preseason. That was the last time you were on. And we're talking about the preseason top two teams in the country in Texas A&M and Virginia. And here we are on, you know, Memorial Day selection show and everything. And neither of those teams were barely even mentioned during out the selection show. The one mention you get is Virginia and the first team, the first four out there. But yeah, let's go through it real quick. First time since 2019, Virginia will not be in the NCAA tournament field. Third time, as you mentioned, under Brian O'Connor in his 22 seasons. And the first time Brian O'Connor mentioned a lot last week coming out of the ACC tournament that no ACC team in his tenure that was five games over 500 had ever missed the NCAA tournament. The last team to do so was actually 1994 when Duke missed the NCAA tournament. There's also been some format changes since then, but still a crazy statistic to look at. And we'll kind of talk about maybe some of the reasons behind that. We said yesterday when I invited you to come on, we're coming on good or bad. We're going to be in it here. And certainly this is the worst case scenario for Virginia to be a preseason number two ranked team in the country to go all the way to missing the NCAA tournament completely. How would you just kind of sum up, you know, I guess Virginia, you know, where they are now?
It's interesting that this happened the exact same year as the Texas A&M thing, and not that they are direct parallels, but I just sort of have found the two to be a fascinating case study all season long. In the case of Texas A&M, you return a bunch of talent. That's the same as Virginia. In the case of Texas A&M, you get a first-year head coach. Certainly not the case with Virginia. And I think that is what gave me more reason for encouragement when it came to the Cavaliers as compared to the Aggies, just sort of looking at college baseball as a whole. Injuries happened for both, for sure. Some big, some small, but either way, they kind of chunk up a season. And look, it's a long season in some ways, but in some ways it's a very, very short season. And for players like Jace LaViolette of Texas A&M, like Harrison Didowick of Virginia, look, sometimes it just doesn't occur over a small sample size. And again, with the various obstacles that came for Virginia, it didn't even feel like a 50 game sample. It felt like a bunch of 10 game samples, if that makes sense, right? So like in any 10 game sample, a player can slump. It just so happens that certain guys had a few stacked in a row, of 10 game samples where it was the case. So it was a lot of injury, a lot of just like stuff not panning out. And I mean, not to call it the final nail, and of course it was the right thing to do, but not playing those three games in Tallahassee just kind of felt like, oh well, maybe this isn't going to happen. That was the start of that feeling anyway. And then certainly you get to Durham and don't win your first game, which is against a non-tournament team. And maybe there's some conversation to be had about that format here as well. You know, I think one of the large takeaways with the new tournament format was you're likely going to be playing a high RPI opponent, and a one and done scenario is not going to do you in if you're a bubble team. This feels like maybe pool play could have done Virginia some good, and they would have, you know, been able to stay and have a couple extra games, and maybe you lose those two and you bury yourself even further, but at least you would have one. That the thing with pool play is you're with two other teams, and you know, at least you would have one of those games against a tournament team, right? And that's an opportunity. So that's maybe something about the new format that we didn't consider coming in. I raved about it initially, genuinely
Yeah.
thinking that okay, this is going to be best for bubble teams. I'm maybe reconsidering that. I still like the format more ways than I don't, but in terms of an ACC team that is right near the edge and trying to get into the field of 64, you know, maybe it's not as ideal as we thought. So it's just a combination of factors, man.
It's weird. Like we keep coming back to, that's the word. And I don't want to, bag the whole, single elimination, format for the ACC tournament, but it is very ironic that, we're seeing this situation kind of play out for Virginia where, maybe, pool play, maybe things go a little bit differently if, they get a game against Boston College and UNC. Automatically, maybe things are a little bit different. Because, and we're, t I want to talk about the ACC scheduling and format and all that stuff later, because I think that kind of came into play, not just with Virginia, but in a couple different places here. I want to go kind of a big picture thought first. And it's only because on our message board, and I see it so many other places, the term that Virginia coming into the season is the number two preseason ranked team, that they were overrated because they didn't reach up to those, kind of preseason accolades and everything. I can't unequivocally say that, overrated is the wrong word to describe this team. There was no projections coming into this season. Maybe just with a couple new pieces, they had a highly rated freshman class coming in. They had a transfer in Chris Arroyo coming in, who had a lot of, preseason hype around him. But, you look at the rest of this lineup, Henry Godbout, Henry Ford, Harrison Didwick, Eric Becker, even Evan Blanco. These are proven all ACC caliber players that were coming back. And you just do the same thing you did last year. It's kind of who they were coming into the year. And all of a sudden, a couple of those things start to drop off. You mentioned Harrison Didwick. Evan Blanco had the preseason injury and he never quite got back on track. Lost his spot in the starting lineup and kind of made a little late season push. I was kind of hopeful for him in a postseason, what he could do, maybe getting back into the starting line, starting rotation, but Evan Blanco didn't pan out. Henry Ford wasn't quite the same. He hit for a high average, but didn't have the power that he had last year. Wasn't the RBI machine that he was as a freshman. Henry Godbout was one of the highest, hit for average kind of guys in this Virginia lineup. He gets pushed down to fifth in the lineup, and things just don't quite pan out with him. I thought Luke Hansen played well towards the end of last year, and then he doesn't really kind of take that next step this year. So there was a lot of things where it was a regression in a lot of spots from guys across the board. But I don't think that means you're overrated. I think it just, kind of everything kind of came together and it just led to this bad season. I think there was a leadership vacuum that was left without, those kind of UVA stalwarts and Griff O'Farrell, Casey Sauke, Ethan Anderson, where, at times this year, the leadership, it was kind of waning when, especially during some of those rough patches. I think it just kind of it showed in a lot of different ways. I think the pitching, It was kind of similar to last year, where you're like, all right, maybe they're kind of up ticking up towards the end of the year. Jay Wilfork was finding some stuff. Tomas Valančiūnas was finding some stuff. Drew Dickinson was kind of mishmashing this pitching staff together again for a postseason run like he has the last couple of years. I mean, they finished, I think, third in the ACC in team ERA. So, like, they weren't the worst in the ACC. They were far from it. Like, other pitching staffs have been more inconsistent. I just don't think overrated really defines this team.
I think it's too often used a word anyway. But you're right. Like, look, projecting was not, it's not like we were counting on progression for a lot of these guys, right? It was simply be what you've been. And even then, it was scary. The possibility, scary for everybody else, I mean, right? Everybody, and you laid it out really well. Like, most of the people that you expected to be big pieces and still were big pieces of what this team ultimately was, they took steps back. Godbout, Ford, not quite what they've been. Eric Becker was great. There just arguably wasn't the pop that was necessary for this team, although that was kind of down across the country. But two players with double digit home runs is bizarre for a lineup like this with the cachet that they brought in to this season. You mentioned Tomas Valančiūnas. Like, again, we were counting on pieces to be what they've been. Jay Wolfolk, Evan Blanco. Like, how's Tomas Valančiūnas your most steady pitching presence all season? You know what I mean? Like, that's it. Sometimes in sports, and you know this, sometimes teams, individuals, they just don't perform. They don't execute. They don't, and it's just a it's it was that kind of a year for Virginia. And I'm with you. Like, we weren't really projecting much. I don't think anyone's arguing that Chris Arroyo wasn't a great addition to this team. He had a good year. Like, you might be looking at it through a different lens because of the team success, but that's a good player to add to this. I still have high hopes for James Nunnally too, as a freshman, and he had his spots, right? If you're in a position where you're not sort of begging it literally anyone to take a big step and take it over, then you see those seasons differently if you're a Virginia fan. So I hope Virginia fans can view those two as successful additions to the program, even without the ultimate team success.
Yeah, and I'll say overrated is the wrong word. I will say disappointing is probably the right word. You talk about the preseason expectations coming into this, and I want to put this out to listeners, and we can get something going on the message board over at thesaber.com. But to my knowledge, and I know, Darren, this is more kind of UVA-centric, but this has to be one of the most disappointing seasons in UVA athletics history to go from the highs of talking about. I mean, we talked about in the preseason, we were saying this is probably Brian O'Connor's most talented baseball team that he's had here. And you talk about all the teams that Brian O'Connor, all the players that he's had, the players that are in the MLB right now that he's had to go from number two preseason ranked to missing the NCAA tournament. I was talking about it with a friend last night. I don't think there's another example that kind of pops into my head where a team so drastically just missed on preseason expectations and all that. So I do want to kind of listen to some other people, see what they say, but for my money, this is probably one of the more disappointing seasons in Virginia history. Probably one of the most disappointing overall athletic years for Virginia history. If you want to go back to how basketball transpired with, Tony Bennett retiring and kind of the Ron Sanchez year and then football missing out on going to a bowl game too. But Darren, let's get into the NCAA bracket just a little bit more. Talk about Virginia's case, kind of what you saw as the selection show was happening. They put up at the end the last four in. That was Arizona State, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, USC. A lot of those teams we saw earlier on in the selection show. So it's kind of like, all right, you're really sweating now, if you weren't already. The last four out, Southeast Louisiana, Troy, UConn. UConn and UVA, the teams listed there. What do you think of Virginia's case, I guess, coming into it, maybe even before we were texting back and forth yesterday about the bid thieves this weekend, but what do you think about, I guess, their resume and their case this year?
With the obvious uncertainties of how's the committee going to handle that lost series in Tallahassee, when J.R. Teagues told our guys on the D1 Baseball Proper podcast that it would be a consideration, but to what degree, right? So all while wondering that what that piece of this was going to be like. I didn't hate the resume. I like, you know, prior to the stolen bids, I felt pretty good about Virginia and, you know, the Big Ten going to Nebraska, UTSA not winning the American, WKU, who, if they didn't win the CUSA, probably would have been on this same bubble with Virginia, but has some blemishes on their resume, to say the least. I mean, it is a very it's a good thing they won the conference tournament, because I've believed all year it's a very dismissible resume for Western Kentucky. So it's not that's not one I was worried about for them. It when we saw the announcement prior to the selection special of the top four seeds, that spelled some doom for me a little bit. For two reasons. Generally, some ACC slight. And then more specifically, clearly this is going to be a committee, a version of the committee that, when in doubt, is going to lean on RPI. And it's just been, it's the RPI has not been there all year for Virginia. And look, I mean, even if in a perfect scenario, those Florida State games happen, and you know, in stride, there was a discussion, I know, at the time, of like trying to squeeze in a doubleheader at some point and getting two of those games. And it's not that the coaching staff and athletic departments didn't do what they could to try, but obviously we all can agree it was best to not play at all. Even with those scenarios, I mean, you know, there are these metric forecasters that you can input. Okay, what happens if? Even in that scenario, what? Okay, Virginia 1-2, 2-1. It's still on the line RPI wise. Like, you're going to get up to maybe low 50s. So like, you can't point to that one thing and blame it. It was just one of a series of things that happened for Virginia. And I look, like, you can blame the other in-state programs for not being as good as usual this year, but the fact of the matter is, Virginia lost some of those games, even despite that fact. And if you win those games, it's not the knock on RPI that it could be. So yeah, I liked, that's to say, I liked their case before the stolen bids. There just wasn't enough. There wasn't enough cushion for them ultimately in the end. And I've got my issues with, I don't think much of what the committee did was egregious, but I do like, I do, not that I like them, I do sense a couple of patterns that I don't love, just in the matter of who got in, who didn't, some of the specific seeding as well. Coastal Carolina at 13th overall is bizarre,
Yes.
bizarre. And the one thing I look at that I can maybe point to there is that I already mentioned the importance, the evident importance of RPI. The ACC's regular season champion. I know about Georgia Tech's schedule. I get it. I'm not even saying this is wrong for them to do. Georgia Tech did not get a top 16 hosting spot. North Carolina won the conference championship and got bumped from the top four. Not that it's a huge deal, right? Because you're still top eight. They're the fifth. They're going to be
Yeah.
fine. It's not going to play out that differently for North Carolina. But the sixth ranked SEC team in their standings did get bumped up above North Carolina. That's worrisome to me, in a way that you look at Coastal not being a top eight, which I thought was for sure going to happen. They were the double champion, regular season and conference in the Sun Belt. And I understand the top heaviness of that league, but they won it. And those are other really good teams atop that league, one of whom you gave the last hosting spot to in Southern Miss. So I think it became clear that conference standings, conference championships, regular season and tournaments might not mean all that much to this committee. And it changes every year, right? It's a new committee every year. So is this a goalpost you're going to be able to keep where it is when you try to determine next year? Probably not. And these patterns exist every year. You can nitpick it every year to find one or two of them. It just feels to me this year like when in doubt, they leaned on RPI. That's obviously going to favor SEC schools and a 28 win Big 12 team. So,
It was fast. You bring up that interview that the committee chairman did with D1 Baseball, because I think Virginia fans especially gleaned a lot from that interview. Obviously he mentions directly Virginia's series against the Florida State, how much that's going to be taken into consideration. But he seemed to downplay RPI a lot during that interview, and he also seemed to promote conference standings. And so if you're a Virginia fan, you're like, that's great. We finished sixth in the ACC. Our RPI is not great, but they're not valuing it as much. And then to get to Selection Sunday, and it seemed like none of that was actually, I don't know if maybe none of that was actually true, but there's
Yeah,
other
not none
people.
of it, but you understand what I'm saying, right?
There's other people on the committee as well.
Yeah.
So like it's not
Well,
just him.
that's and in Jay's defense, when he had that conversation, a lot of the answers began with, I believe.
Yes.
I believe he was speaking for himself, which maybe is it's misleading. I don't know that it's tough to nitpick the way you answer questions when you're just trying to be honest with somebody and giving someone your time and trying to be transparent. So I'm not saying that Jay, needed to conduct his interviews in a different way. I think he just could have garnered a little bit more faith in him and faith in the process had he maybe tried to anticipate that he is not the committee. So when you say, I think in those scenarios, you're giving an impression to a mass of people that just simply is not going to be the case, right? And maybe we could have heard it that way and been smart for it, been smart to it, and not taken as much as we did from that conversation. But again, human nature is, hey, this is the committee chair saying these things. That's probably going to be the way they see it. Yeah, I think that threw me for a loop as well, especially given again these small trends that I have detected while looking through the field. It's interesting.
I kind of kept going back to last year, and I know it's different committee, different people, but Florida getting in. I was like, maybe they're just going to throw a bone to Virginia just because of the brand value in the NCAA baseball tournament. I mean, it's not like NCAA basketball where like people are watching no matter what. Sometimes NCAA baseball, they're like, well, we want some of the bigger brands in there so people watch. I
Which
thought maybe.
honestly that was part of it for A&M too. And A&M was gonna be in and on the right side of the bubble until that disaster series against Missouri. And I think even with a run in the SEC tournament, they were kind of improving their chances. And look, like I'm not saying it was a conscious decision by the committee, but Jace LaViolette breaks his hand. It's like, okay, here's an easy out. Like, no star power. Like, are the stars not going to play in the regional? Like, or he would, but he would be hurt. And I don't know. Maybe there's an argument to be made that that's better TV if you do let him in, but that being the case. But anyways, I thought potentially that would be the case. Like you're saying, you let him in for sake of, hey, when in doubt, go with the big brand. But it also felt like, with both A&M and Virginia all year, it was like, man, are they going to do that for two? Are they going to make two of those exceptions on the bubble? I doubted that. And it just turned out that, both of them kind of played their way out of being close enough to really get that consideration.
And then on the other side, you mentioned the Chase LaViolette injury, but Virginia kind of gave the door for the committee to leave him out with the loss to Boston College and how poorly they played in that game. I know it looked a little closer in the end, but as bad as they started in that game with the massive fielding errors, which kind of plagued this team all season long, the pitching was it was what it was, and they made a little bit of run with the offense towards the end there, but as bad as they looked and some of the comedy of errors that they kind of made, and the irony of this season ending at 2:20 in the morning on in down in Durham is not lost on a lot of people right now. But that opened the door. I said at the time, like, they didn't need to win necessarily to get in, but losing that game completely throws open the door that if there are bid thieves, if there's any doubt, that loss gave them plenty of reason just to keep them out of the NCAA tournament field.
Yeah, which again brings back the format, right? It's funny that in this, I mean, there were a lot of funny things that occurred in this first year of the ACC looking like it did, right? The first year that the California teams are in, the first year that all 16 teams make the tournament field. Cal is the 16, wins as many consecutive ACC games as they have all year, advancing, a couple of days in that. So, yeah, it's funny that the main bubble team that the ACC would have liked to have gotten in, and I see Notre Dame. I know Notre Dame was there too, but also like Miami, Notre Dame, Virginia, they all lost in their first round game. So it's interesting to me that a format that I think overall over time is going to pan out better for getting teams into the field maybe worked in an opposite way, a way that's counter to its intent in its first season being implemented. It's just it was that kind of a year for teams like Virginia and Notre Dame, and I guess that kind of a year for the ACC in adding Cal and Stanford, and that's two of the bottom few teams in the league, right? Teams with very good history.
Put a pin in that. We're going to talk about that in just a second. I want to finish wrap up here with the NCAA tournament field, then we'll take a quick break. A lot of fans, just because it's the enemy that will compare Virginia's resume to other ACC teams, largely Miami, maybe a little Wake Forest, but look, ma mainly Miami in this situation because Virginia just saw Miami, their last home series of the season, swept Miami. Miami has a little bit of a tailspin towards the end of the season, like you mentioned there. They lose their, first ACC tournament game, lost at Notre Dame, lost, swept by Virginia in Charlottesville. I guess it comes down to RPI. And then this is another situation that I want to talk about after the break is the ACC scheduling format, because Miami gets helped a lot because of not who they beat, but who they got to play in the ACC schedule.
Yeah, it's and I this is where I think there are maybe some contradictory things in play with decisions the committee has made, because you can't have it both ways, right? You can't both get rewarded for playing good teams and then get knocked for not having a good record against those teams. And it has felt a little selective in some of these case to case bases, right? To put one outside of the ACC into perspective, I thought Troy should have made the field of 64. And Troy is a team that at D1 baseball, we ranked them in the preseason. They remained ranked the entire year until dropping their first weekend series of the year, and that was against Southern Miss. They got swept. It was not particularly competitive, but that's a team that was very highly thought of the whole season. And then they get a chance maybe to redeem that series loss in their conference tournament, and they lose to Southern Miss again. Okay, cool. I get it. Four losses to the same team, but it's a team you think is worthy of a regional and hosting a regional. So those wins over Troy can't both, and obviously they're not in vacuums. They're not the only things to the resumes, But with the Sun Belt teams up there at the top, I mean, there's not much else to compare. You cannot reward Southern Miss for those four victories over Troy, saying, man, that's a really good team that they beat, and then keep Troy out based on those four losses, right? That's
Yeah.
I think there's some of that being done everywhere, and it's because of the abundance of information and the need to make decisions in team versus team cases. And you kind of lose sight of the forest for the trees. I think we make this stuff a lot harder on ourselves than we need to. For instance, the sixth ranked SEC team should not hold a spot higher than the first ranked ACC team.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. And again, I'm not even trying to make the case for the ACC that, we're like it's a league that's there punching with the SEC. Like, I get it. The SEC is the SEC. We all understand that. But in a year, especially where there's no juggernaut atop the SEC, there is no surefire bet to be the number one, and therefore they defaulted
Yeah,
to
correct.
Vanderbilt when it could have been a couple others. It could have been. I mean, it's been a weird year at the top, and no one has really known how to treat that number one overall seed this year. In a year like that, you're going to tell me that the sixth best SEC team is going to be a higher seeded squad than a North Carolina team that's been dominant, especially as of late. There's some contradiction there for sure.
Two of the biggest surprises kind of going off of that. I mean, obviously, like Georgia Tech not getting to host. That was, we talked about that a little bit. North Carolina not being in the top four, I think, was a little bit of a miss. I'm surprised, and we mentioned Coastal Carolina earlier, that there's not an ACC team in the Conway regional. And that,
That's pretty unusual because
It's
normally, I
very
mean,
unusual. And you look at every single D1 baseball prediction, Baseball America, you can talk about whoever you want, had an ACC team in that regional because it just seems like, yeah, of course. Like you'll put NC State or Wake or Duke or, whoever it may be in Conway. Instead, Florida gets in there. And I was just like, all right, so yeah, the SEC is going to get, kind of their pick of the litter this year.
Well, and it's also worth considering, like, look, this is it's I do say they make it harder, but it is not easy necessarily by
No.
nature of what it is, because the committee is tasked with both trying to properly seed teams and have them play in their certain spots based on that, while also keeping geography in mind.
Yes.
And I think it is important when you are not. As long as it is otherwise close, I don't, for instance, mind UCLA getting a regional spot because I think geography had something to do with it. I don't mind that. I think it's in the best interest of the game if we can spread it out as much as possible,
Sure.
as long as it's otherwise close. So, with that in mind, the proximity certainly makes a ton of sense for an ACC team to be at Coastal. Then again, the proximity makes sense for ACC teams at SEC regionals a lot too. So, and despite how that may or may not, make the bracket more difficult, I happen to think Coastal is very good. So if I was an SEC team, I don't know that I would have wanted to go there. Maybe unless I'm Duke, but just because Duke hits there every time they play there. But yet then again, the Blue Devils got a pretty favorable one at Georgia,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
they've had success there in the postseason before. So, all that is to say, I understand the complexities of the task at hand with the committee. I just when I say they make it harder sometimes than it actually is, I think they're going outside of those complexities that are givens, right? And they're just
Yeah.
adding complexities.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break here on the Who's On podcast. Then I want to talk a little bit more ACC focus and then kind of looking forward for Virginia. We'll be right back.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. Darren Vaught, my guest, host of the ACC Baseball Etc. podcast on the D1 Baseball Network. Darren, few people watch and talk as much ACC baseball as you do, and I want to get into the scheduling and the format right now, because that will be a very popular topic, because you look at Georgia Tech and how their schedule kind of just laid out. Again, you have very little control about how your schedule lays out for the year, but I believe they didn't play the number 2, 3, or 4 teams during the regular season in the final ACC standings. Virginia did not play UNC or Clemson. Didn't get to play Florida State for other reasons. There's a lot of other those kind of scheduling intricacies here. And I think it's time we have the conversation too about the additions of Cal and Stanford. And maybe not just this sport, but you look back to basketball, you look to football, like it has not paid off in, you know, tournament bids and everything else, adding those two teams. But overall, what do you think of the scheduling format and kind of some of the, I guess, things that happen because of it?
I mean, largely it's going to have to be what it is, right? Yeah. Because of the 16 teams and the mega league that it's become. And that's something I try to keep in mind with this Georgia Tech thing. Again, I'm very aware of what's going on. You're right. They avoided air quotes. And this goes to the contradictory, right? So they don't play FSU. They don't play UNC. They don't play NC State. Okay, does that hurt them or does that help them? Because it helped them get a regular season championship. And I think there's more picking and choosing with this type of stuff too, because and there probably will be going forward, because again, the imbalanced scheduling is just going to be a thing. And if you're going to circle that stuff with such a thick ink when it comes to Georgia Tech, then we better see it on the inverse. See it, like, I need to see it on the inverse when I look at a team like Clemson, who played a really good ACC schedule this year. And even if their record was not quite what somebody like Georgia Tech's was, right? They need to be recognized as a team that, like, you look at it for Florida State as well. And should that have affected their case for a top 8 national seed? They ended up number 9 and really close. I just wonder if the same scrutiny was applied in the inverse. Mm-hmm. And I keep coming back to it because I don't think it has been in most cases. I do not think the committee has applied that same logic when it's on the other side of the coin. For the future of the, like, we just have to accept it. That's what it's going to be. And this is probably a fight. If you're an ACC fan, you're going to fight year in and year out until the format changes again, or until the conference changes again. It just feels like it's part of the nature of the beast. And even athletic directors, look, these are smart people who can ride with change, but there is a precondition based on the way we've done it forever now. It feels like maybe they already are making that correction, or they weren't anticipating that being such a big factor. So therefore they say, okay, rather than conference standings, let's look at RPI. Without knowing what specifically was said in the room, maybe the adjustment has already been made by this brand new committee. Maybe it kind of snuck up on them and then they didn't really know how to approach it. So that's what RPI is for. We've got this metric. And so it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. Cause it's not just the ACC's problem. It's It's the SEC's problem too, but that doesn't seem to get taken into consideration with their teams who don't play the best in the SEC, because apparently everyone's a resume improver, right? So
Yeah.
it's something we gotta get used to observing and maybe sticking up for and seeing with the schedule. But to that point, I would have told you at the beginning of the year that we would be a great thing if
Yeah.
you somehow evaded the top three teams in the conference. I just don't necessarily know that that's a thing anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's something here, the math doesn't math. At the end of
Right.
the day, across the board, it's really fascinating, and I'm talking about this with a lot of different people because it's kind of one of the first things that popped to mind when Virginia gets left out is, all right, Cal, Stanford, those additions, like Virginia played both of them this year. They beat both in the end, but did either really help the resume?
I got something for you. You'll love
Yes.
this. So, prior to the ACC tournament, and this maybe goes in along the lines of the case for Miami. So maybe your listeners will be interested in hearing this. Danny Graves, my co-host, and I were curious because the Tuesday, like the Tuesday, Wednesday, 9 through 18 in the or
Yeah.
9 through 16 in the conference, in order to win the conference tournament, you're going to have to win 5 games in 6 days. Right. And we don't have a great way to compare that, except for over a span of longer, who in the ACC had a 5-game conference win streak or more or two in with throughout the season. Ultimately, there were 6 5 or more game winning streaks in ACC competition. Okay. We scratched off a couple of them because I'll start with Clemson at 5. 3 games versus Cal, 2 versus Stanford. Okay. And that's fine if that's the only one, but there's a trend, as you're, I think, catching on to. Georgia Tech won 6 in a row at one point, 3 Stanford, 3 Cal. Notre Dame won 6 in a row at one point, 3 Stanford, 3 Cal. Like, 3 of the 6 streaks that we identified. So we were like, okay, we're gonna cross those out, right? So then you get to Wake Forest was next, 3 Notre Dame, 3 Miami. Pretty good, right? Like
Yeah, that's good. That's
that's
solid.
viable. 7 is the next best. And NC State. So they stacked this 3 series together. 1 over Louisville, 3 at Cal, and then 3 versus Clemson. Viable.
Yeah.
Even with the inclusion of Cal, they're viable. Miami won 10 games in a row in conference play at one point this season. Longest by a lot, right? NC
Yes.
State was second most at 7. 2 against Duke, tournament team. 3 against Georgia Tech, regular season champion. 3 at BC, not a tournament team, but on the road. And then
As Virginia
two.
knows, it's hard to beat BC.
And then 2 against NC State, and they could have had a chance at a third, and it certainly felt like if they would have played that third game, they were going to beat NC State again. So, like, that is to say, it has a strong effect on the ACC standings when teams get worse teams scheduled, right? Because again, clearly there was a trend there, and these are all upper half or mostly upper half of the league teams that benefited from beating up on teams that this year were just lesser. I love the additions of Stanford and Cal. They're great programs. And I think it's just going to come with some ebb and flow. There's also the conversation to be had about, the cross-country travel for those teams. Does that affect things? Stanford won their first two ACC series. Cal won their first ACC series. And then it sort of tapered as the year went on. And coming into the year, I knew from those head coaches that, okay, we've been given permission to leave on Wednesday for series if we want to. David Esker at Stanford initially thought maybe it was just going to be experimental. It's like sometimes we'll do it, sometimes we won't. Turns out, all told, those teams left on Wednesday every week, every time. And those are not, like, These guys go to class at Stanford and Berkeley. Like, come on. And you're on campus essentially one day a week. It'll be interesting to see how many adjustments are made and how that is tweaked by those two programs going forward. But just quickly to converse that, you look at the Big Ten. West Coast teams of the Big Ten were like the best. I mean, they brought that league up this year. It's
Cleaned up the
and
Big
made
Ten,
it
yeah.
interesting.
I'm really interested because we've already seen kind of a course correction to maybe address some of this with basketball, where now they're gonna have a floating double home and away that they can kind of pick and choose, and then they also don't play one team every year that they can kind of pick and choose, and everyone knows that is explicitly to help the net rankings and all that stuff in basketball. Baseball, I don't really see a way to do that. I mean, maybe some creative minds in the, at the ACC AD president and ACC office level can figure something out. But like you said, it's kind of a problem that, the ACC is going to have to get used to, and kind of what can you do to counteract that and balance that in the years going forward? Because, Virginia, for example, 64 RPI, not going to cut it. I mean, you've got to finish higher than the RPI going forward, and sometimes RPI is a weird kind of fickle data point, because I go back to, this is kind of out there, but men's lacrosse RPI, there was a year where all of the Ivy League teams were high up in the RPI, and so like they're all beating up on each other, but their RPI just kept going up and up because they all had the best RPI, and so like the ACC, I think, almost got blanked from the NCAA tournament. RPI can kind of have that similar effect. You talked about the SEC. All these teams are kind of beating up on each other in the SEC, and so they kind of see their RPI continue to rise up and up, even if they're not necessarily winning games in the end. It's going to be really fascinating just to see, kind of what those meetings like are this off season, and kind of how do you correct some of this stuff going forward.
The bananas thing too is, I believe it's once every 3 seasons, Stanford and Cal won't even have the luxury of playing each other, which I think by the time it comes into play should be corrected because they should play each other every year. Like that's just to even if it's, you're Stanford and you're taking a trip to Cal, it's something of a breather from the travel on a weekend, and I think that's deserved. Now some years you might say, well, we don't necessarily, especially if it happens toward the end of the year and, somebody's not in it and another team's more competitive, you might bemoan the fact that you're having to play that team. But again, we just got to do the best that we can to do what makes sense. And it does not make sense for 5 weekends of the year, if we can help it, for those teams to have to travel cross country. And in some cases, like we saw with both teams this year, sometimes it's 2 and 3 weeks in a row you're having to do that. So it stands to get really interesting for those two programs in particular.
I want to wrap up just going back to Virginia, kind of at the center of this podcast, and wrap up on them. Just obviously a disappointing season this year. You play both sides of the coin here. There's reasons to put them in. There are plenty of reasons to leave them out. One side I didn't mention earlier is that only 4 times under Brian O'Connor have they lost at least 6 non-conference games. 3 of those have been the 2 years that they've been left out. The only other one was 2016 when they did make the field. So win your games against Liberty and Richmond in the midweek, and maybe we're having a different discussion right now on this podcast. Virginia going forward, we talked, Brian O'Connor, if anyone has earned the, reasonable doubt, or beyond reasonable doubt, or the benefit of the doubt rather, it's Brian O'Connor, just what he's done in this program for 22 years now. This is going to be one of the more interesting seasons for him. And my pal Greg Medea from the Daily Progress reported earlier that, there's this flirtation with Mississippi State. He ends up staying because, UVA is going all in with the resources for NIL. There's supposed to be good resources behind this program going into the offseason. It's going to be really interesting. I think player decisions for the draft are going to be really interesting. Not a lot of guys improved their stock this year. In fact,
No,
a lot.
it's a funny here we go again situation in some ways, right? just in different ways, in ways that, last year it was maybe guys expecting to go
Yes.
and being surprised by their stock or lack thereof. You're right, this year there's going to be some decisions that have to be made, and depending on how that accumulation of resources goes for the program, maybe it can be worthwhile for some guys to stay put and give it
Yeah.
another year and continue to grow. But you gotta do that. You gotta grow. Like
Yeah.
you
They
gotta
won't get that benefit of the doubt going into next year that, all right, they'll get back up, they'll progress back to those levels. Like you lost that.
Yeah, and when we talked earlier about the team simply just not performing, there's an under there's both that both things can be present, an understanding that that happens,
Yeah.
but a watchful eye on next season, knowing that that cannot happen again.
Yes.
And that's speaking both from a program level to an individual level. It's not often you see the kind of drops in production that they saw with players as good as they had. And thirdly, the benefit of the doubt is there. So I believe, they'll pick it back up next year. Yeah, of course. I mean,
Yeah.
it's Virginia baseball. That's like, it's what they do. So it would certainly be a surprise if it happened again. And they know that. They know that.
Yeah. I'm left a little optimistic going into next season, strictly because I think they've got a future ace in Tomas Valančiūnas on this staff. And that's something Virginia's not had since Andrew Abbott. I'm very high on Valančiūnas and his potential. They've also got some guys that'll come back off of injury. Matt Augustine, who was supposed to be the closer for this team coming into the year, he missed all of last season. William Kirk, who was another really promising freshman coming in, he missed all of last season. We'll see where kind of levels they're at. Bradley Hodges, Jack O'Connor missed a good chunk of the season recovering from their injuries, and then O'Connor went back out of the lineup. Are out of the rotation because of injuries, and Bradley Hodges, flirted with some high potential and flirted with some of the some other stuff, which is kind of typical for maybe a guy that's kind of technically a sophomore year when you think about it. Blanco, we'll see what happens with him. And they also have another highly touted recruiting class. We'll see how many of those guys make it to grounds. Maybe that's where some of those resources come into hand, where you can convince some of these guys, hey, just give us a chance for a couple of years. I thought Eric Becker took a big step this year, so it'd be interesting to kind of see what he does going forward. Aiden Teal took a big step this year,
Yep.
in his first year at the lineup. So there were some success stories at the end of the day, that maybe just didn't get enough as much attention because of the overall team lack of success. But I think there's some solid pieces, and it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what they do around the edges and who comes back, who leaves. It was interesting last year. This year, it's kind of interesting for a whole
With a
bout of
twist. It's
with a
interesting with a
twist.
twist. And the twist was the whole 2025 season that everybody just wants to kind of shut the door on.
Yeah,
So
it is fascinating. All right, Darren, thank you for coming on right after the selection show to talk a little bit about UVA baseball, even though probably for the last time you'll talk about UVA baseball for the year, because you got other teams to talk about going forward in the NCAA tournament.
I tell you what though. I'm excited for the postseason, but I cannot wait to talk about Virginia again come, January, February. All right.
We'll be there, Darren. All right, appreciate you having you on. That'll do for the Who's On podcast this week. Thanks for listening. Again, you can listen on Apple, Spotify, thesaber.com, wherever you find your podcasts. Listen and give us a 5-star review while you're there, or follow and subscribe. We will see you next week here on the Who's On podcast.
Field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.